ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय These boys should either come and sit inside or play outside, but not hang in the window like that. Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 5, text 11, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Kayena Manasa Buddhya Kevalai Indriyai Api Yoganaha Karma Kurvanti Sangam Tyaktava Atma Shuddhaye Kayena Manasa Buddhya Kevalai Indriyai Api Yogina karma kurvanti
Yogina karma kurvanti
Sangam tyaktva atma shuddhaye
Sangam tyaktva atma shuddhaye
Kayena manasa buddhya
Kayena manasa buddhya
Kevalair indriyair api
Kevalair indriyair api
Yogina karma kurvanti
Yogina karma kurvanti
Sangam tyaktva atma shuddhaye Kayena manasa buddhya
Kayena manasa buddhya
Kevalair indriyair api
Kevalair indriyair api
Yogina karma kurvanti
Yogina karma kurvanti
Sangam tyaktva atma shuddhaye
Sangam tyaktva atma shuddhaye
Verse translation. The yogis, abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. Purport. When one acts in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the senses of Krishna, any action, whether of the body, mind, intelligence, or even the senses, is purified of material contamination. There are no material reactions resulting from the activities of a Krishna-conscious person. Therefore, purified activities, which are generally called sadacha, can be easily performed by acting in Krishna consciousness. Sri Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, describes this as follows. Iha yasya harer dase karmana manasa gira nikila svapyavasthasu jivan mukta sa uchate. A person acting in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, in the service of Krishna, with his body, mind, intelligence, and words, is a liberated person even within the material world, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities. End of that translation. He has no false ego, for he does not believe that he is this material body or that he possesses the body. He knows that he is not this body and that this body does not belong to him. He himself belongs to Krishna, and the body too belongs to Krishna. When he applies everything produced of the body, mind, intelligence, words, life, wealth, etc., whatever he may have within his possession, in Krishna's service, he is at once dovetailed with Krishna. He is one with Krishna and is devoid of the false ego that leads one to believe that he is the body, etc. This is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. Kayena manasa buddhya kevalair indriyair api yogina karma kurvanti sangam tyaktvatma shuddhaye. The yogis, abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. This verse is not one of the better known verses of Bhagavad Gita, but it's one that I personally find very inspiring. how we are meant to live in this world and act in this world, but only for the purpose of purification. This chapter, Srila Prabhupada has given the title in English as Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Of course, the word yogi doesn't necessarily refer to persons acting in Krishna consciousness. And many people will, in fact probably most commentators on Bhagavad Gita will take it to mean the word yogi to mean any kind of yogi. And actually all kinds of yoga are meant for purification. But especially the bhakti yogi is concerned with purification. When we hear the word atma is used, the word atma can mean body, mind, or soul. So in Vedic culture there's much consideration of bodily purity. One who has no bodily purity, who eats all kinds of dirty things and who has all kinds of unclean habits, such a person is not even allowed in Vedic society. They're antyaja, they're born outside, they're called chandalas, mlechas, yavanas, and so on. And the one who is most purified in observing ritual purity, they're called, they're known as brahmana, sometimes called shuchi, because they're supposed to be very pure. But although yogis observe ritual purity and they also try to purify the body, that means just like regularly bathing, changing clothes, keeping one's dwelling place clean, performing archaman before various activities, washing hands, feet and mouth just after eating and urinating. So many rules are there. There's also purification of the body, especially the hatha yogis will do by fasting, cleaning the dirty things out of the body. There are also various activities, I just don't remember the name now, where all the bile in the stomach is cleaned out by inserting cloth into the esophagus and so on. But really the Atma Shuddhi that the yogi aims at, the bodily purification, is not very important. I'll close that door from inside so we have less noise here. This is not very important because the body is temporary. Well, the mental covering over the soul, that's also temporary, but it's that which carries us from body to body to body. So purification particularly means purification of the mental coverings of the soul, the consciousness. As far as the soul is concerned, there's no question of purification of the soul, because the soul is asanga hi ayam purusha. Your soul is not connected with anything material. So the purification really means purification of the consciousness. Sangam tyaktva, by giving up bad association. Generally when we think of giving up bad association, we think of giving up the association of materialistic people or mayavadis, non-devotees. But here that's included, but in a broader sense it means to give up material attachments and the kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, material contaminations of lust, anger, greed, and so on. And by giving these up, one becomes purified. Now, the yogis, who are not devotees, They consider that purification consists only of giving up material attachments. They think that, or we've often heard that the Mayavadis, they say, well, you have to give up ahankar, isn't it? Be free of ahankar. Well, the Vaishnavas, they say, well, it's not completely possible to give up ahankar because we are living, discrete beings. Their idea is that you give up ahankar and then you just merge into the oneness that they imagine to be the ultimate. But a Vaishnav does not attempt to give up the sense of ahankar or ahamta, that's another word, the sense of I-ness. Ahankar means that which makes I. And ahamta means the sense of being I. But a Vaishnav doesn't give that up, but rather he gives his identity as Vaishnav Dasanu 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 Das, the servant of the servant of the servant of the Vaishnavas. And Vaishnava means the servant of Vishnu. So when it's stated here that the one tries to give up bad association, that's not all in all. That is required, but that's not all in all. Later in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will explain in more detail that real purification means to be Krishna conscious, and the best yoga is bhakti yoga. So devotees, they see spiritual advancement not only in terms of being freed from material attachment. Of course, that's there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye. I don't desire name, fame, glory, beautiful women, intellectual achievements, any such thing. So that's there within bhakti, but it's not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is Mama janmani janmani shvare bhavatad bhakti rahaitu kitvai. Even in birth after birth, not even moksha. That's the idea of the yogis. They think you become free from attachment to this world. Attachment to this world binds us to it. Therefore, if we become detached, we get moksha. We become liberated from this world. But the Vaishnavas, they don't even pray for moksha. They only pray for devotional service to Krishna without any material motive. And that is prem. That is the platform of prem, pure love of Krishna. So this statement, which is here, kayena manasa buddhya, the yogis, they act with their mind, body and words, kevalaira indriyairapi, with the senses. Yogina karma kuravanti, the yogis, they perform activities, sangam tyaktva atma shuddhya, for purification. That's true of all yogis, but the bhakti yogis, they have a higher goal. For them this is a preliminary stage, or it is coexistent with as a byproduct of developing pure Krishna consciousness. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, when someone first takes it, of course some people are born into Krishna conscious families, but many people, and I think everyone here is, they weren't born into a Krishna conscious family per se, but at some point in their life they came in contact with devotees and they thought, yes, I want to be like that also. So it's a change of direction, a change of focus, a change of consciousness. And in the beginning it may seem to be very easy. We just understand, yes, this is what I want to do. When one takes to Krishna consciousness, it's a specific decision that this is what I want to do. There may be some exceptions. Not very many. Our godbrother Surabhir Abhipalayantam Swami, Srila Prabhupada, he narrated how he didn't really intend to be a a devotee of Krishna, fully surrendered. He came to India. He was an architect or a draftsman. And he thought while he was in India, he'd look at some Krishna, some different temples to get some ideas for architecture. So he was in Bombay and he was sent, because he was a Westerner, he asked for a temple and they sent him to the Hare Krishna place, which wasn't, there was no temple, it was in an apartment at the time. So he went there and he didn't really know what he was doing, but they just treated him okay. Now he came in, shaved off his hair. The next day they moved to Juhu where there was a temple to be built, and they introduced him to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, yes, Krishna has sent you. You can design the temple. And he did. And then Prabhupada said, now you draw this and you draw that. He initiated him the same day. And he didn't know what was going on, but he thought, well, he just took it, well, it's out of my control. And actually he underwent many austerities and to build the temple in Vrindavan. And finally, he'd finished the temple in Vrindavan just in time for the opening. And Prabhupada said, okay, your work here is finished, now go to Bombay. And Prabhupada didn't even allow him to stay for the opening. Just a few days before, he said, now go to Bombay, work on the Bombay project. So anyway, generally, to get back to the theme, I just thought that's not what I said is not completely true. There may be some exceptions also. But generally we make a decision that yes, this is what I want to do. You have to make a decision because for most people it means a great change of one's lifestyle. Even in India, for most people, when they take to Krishna consciousness, they have to stop eating meat, and their particular tea, coffee, all these things. But it's not just the sinful activities that have to be given up, but a whole change of consciousness. So, in the beginning, we have a very clear idea. Yeah, this is what I want to do. I want to be Krishna conscious, and I have to surrender to Krishna. And it all seems very straightforward and easy. That's all I have to do is surrender to Krishna. And we may be very enthusiastic with great faith that if I just, I'll just surrender to Krishna. That's all. And it's straightforward and easy. And actually it is. In many ways it's very easy. And if we compare it to doing strict yoga practice of difficult breathing exercises and lots of austerities, it's very easy. And devotees think, yeah, that's all I want. I just want to surrender to Krishna. I don't want to do anything else. And such a surrender, and the devotee, especially if they're living in a temple, they become a brahmachari, then it's expected that they're ready to do any service, they don't complain, just full of life, full of enthusiasm. This is based on great faith that if I just do this, then my life is perfect. And they want to do it. Of course, not everyone's like that. Some join and still they're begrudging and complaining, but really those who are begrudging and complaining and don't want to do all kinds of services, they're not really fit to live in an ashram. In fact, we find there are many grihastha devotees who come here whenever they can because they like to do service. They have a taste for doing service to Krishna. So, in the beginning, whether we're living in the temple or not, often devotees have an innocent kind of faith. Innocent, you know what that means? You know what it means? You got the right word? Natural kind of faith. In Hindi we'd say sahaj. Innocent. And there, that's because I heard you stop, so I thought you didn't catch the word. There's a similar word to innocent in English, is actually borrowed from French, which doesn't help you very much to tell you that, is called naive, which means foolishly, almost foolishly innocent. Naive means we can be cheated very easily. So that kind of innocence, that's very good. That just completely surrender, that's all. I'll just surrender here, surrender to Krishna, surrender to the Guru, surrender to the Vaishnavas, and feel very happy in doing so. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Atma nivedan tua pade kare. Hoinu paramasukhi, dukkha dure gelo. Chintana rahilo, charadike ananda deki. He says that, praying to Krishna, he says that having Atma Nivedan, completely surrendered to you, I become supremely happy. All my distress has gone far away. All my anxiety no longer exists. And everywhere I just see bliss. So that's the happiness of surrendering to Krishna. We just have great faith that yes, Prabhupada says, if we surrender to Krishna, Krishna himself says, if we surrender to him, we become completely happy. And so we do so. And it's bliss. But, gradually we start to see, there was a naive faith, or an innocent but good faith, but not really very practical faith. That, well, all the devotees, they're all completely pure devotees, and in Krishna consciousness there are no problems. And gradually we start to see, they're not all so pure as I thought they were. Some of them see, they may be not getting up in the morning, or sometimes grumbling, or sometimes talking things they shouldn't be talking. Then our attitude starts to change a little. And we don't have that same kind of faith. We might even become somewhat skeptical or critical. You see that these people, they're supposed to be great devotees, and everyone respects them, but if you get a little closer, you'll see, then they're maybe not so pure after all. Well, that's to be expected, because it's not that everyone who joins the Krishna conscious movement does so. They're all pure devotees in all respects from the very beginning. We join this movement for purification, Atma Shuddhi. If we were completely pure, either we wouldn't be in this world at all, or we'd be one of those great Paramahamsas, rare Paramahamsas who come to this world only to uplift others. So it would be more realistic to expect that devotees have some faults, but we shouldn't be discouraged. We should think that, well, all right, they maybe have this fault and that fault, but anyway, they're here to serve Krishna. Everyone in this world has got so many faults, but those who are trying to serve Krishna, at least they're in the purification process. One problem is that those who do, they're enthusiastic in the beginning, and then the others see they like to do service, so they give them all the service. You do all the service and I'll sit and be a Paramahamsa and just do my chanting. So then they may become overloaded. They themselves don't have time for proper chanting, or they become too tired or whatever. So it may be that the initial enthusiasm goes down. Someone in the beginning may be very enthusiastic to do lots of service, but they say, well, others, they're not doing so much service. Why should I? Why should I bother? So that means that they lost their initial idea to fully surrender and do whatever is required, or they may just become somewhat comfortable in Krishna consciousness. See, I do 16 rounds, I attend the program, I do my service, and that's enough, and that's all right. In fact, I don't know if it's still there, but some years ago I saw at our ISKCON center in London, they had a list of all things that the devotees living in the temple had to do. And it said they have to do a minimum, I think it was 8 hours or 6 hours of service a day. And then they may think, okay, did it, finished, okay, no more, that's it. Did my 8 hours. There's some garbage fell on the floor, nope, I can't pick it up because I finished my 8 hours. In fact, I also heard this. In fact, one of the temple presidents there told me that just to make everything legal, if you think India's getting tight, well, the West has already been very tight legally for many years. They have a system where they want to give grihasthas who are engaged in deity worship or whatever something for maintain, some money for maintaining their family. So to do that legally, they have to have a contract and all this kind of thing. They have to have some work, some legal agreement. So legal agreement is to do so many hours of work. The pujari gets so many hours of work. And I mean, it's not necessarily wrong, it's just doing something practical for how to do it legally, that's all. Better to do it legally. But then the temple president told me that for Janmashtami, the pujari was staying up till midnight doing service. And then after the festival, he came up and said, I need extra pay for overtime. So, what happened to na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, and all this kind? Then it becomes a job, and not... It's a difficult question, because on the one hand, in many countries like Britain, it's in concord with the legal system to have a fixed payment and fixed conditions and all this kind of thing. On the other hand, if it's not seen, there's a difference between a stipend and payment. Stipend means you just give a little something that what's required to keep body and soul together. Payment means it's in exchange. You do this much work, you get this much pay. So it tends to... Then what happens is devotees, they tend to think, well, it's a job. And if they think like that, then the motive of serving Krishna becomes subordinated to the, I'm doing this job to get money, to support my family, and I could get more driving a bus, so I'll go and drive a bus. They might think, because doubtful if you get more driving a bus, but anyway, some other job. So anyway, the point, what I'm getting at here, or trying to get at, is that the yogis, they act for the sake of purification. We should always remember, we're here to serve Krishna so for purification of our consciousness, so that we can serve Krishna in the best possible way. But Maya, Srila Prabhupada wrote in one place, very important statement, that Maya is always trying to take away our enthusiasm. When we come to Krishna consciousness, we feel, oh, enthusiasm. We're feeling so much strain and pain in the material existence. We come to Krishna, oh, so nice. But gradually Maya, she doesn't give up. She doesn't think, oh, I'm defeated. No, no, no. She thinks, oh, all right. Let him be Krishna conscious for a little time. I'll come back a little later. Yes, it's stated. There's Maya has the avaranatmika vritti. That means she covers everyone with illusion. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. She covers everyone with the with the illusion of thinking I am the enjoyer of this world. And if someone tries to come out of that, then prakshepatmaka vritti, she has a special overdrive or special propensity for throwing you back. So Srila Prabhupada called this the covering potency, avaranatmaka, and prakshepatmaka, the throwing potency. Prakshep means to throw, avaran. Avaran means cover. So Maya, she doesn't rest. So if we rest, we'll be overcome. If we're not very careful, if we don't always act for the sake of purification, then Maya will come in the form of doubts. What are you doing this for? Why don't you just be normal? Get a, everyone drinks coffee. What's wrong with that? You can drink coffee also. And all this getting up early in the morning. Of course, it's not only devotees who get up early in the morning. It's even today people are, the farm workers, those who are looking after cows, they have to get, even in the Western countries, if the those who are working on farms, they'll get up very early before sunrise. And in London, if you get up at 4 o'clock, you'll find so many people out on the streets going to work. Many people, they go to work, they early. They have jobs which require them to start very early, maybe shift work or working in the post office or whatever. So it's not only the devotees, the police, bus drivers, they work 24 hours. There are police working, not that individuals be working. Doctors and so many. And it's common if you go to Germany, Australia, America, you may be out in the park walking at 6:30, doing japa, and you'll see there are traffic jams. People going to work, 6:30 in the morning. Isn't it? Have you seen in London? Not in London so much, because if you're in central London, not so much. So it's not only do you think, well, I can sleep more if I don't follow this Krishna consciousness, but it's not necessarily so. I'm in this prison, following all these rules. You go to some factory, you think you can just do what you like? when you have to work. If you work for Krishna, then you have rules and regulations to follow. If you work for some demon, karmi, you also have to follow so many rules. You may think, it's just like a prison. Well, you go to the army, go to the navy. If you're on a ship, you're really in a prison because you can't go anywhere. You're just in the middle of the ocean, and so many rules to follow, whether even if it's merchant navy. So, anyway, Maya will present us so many doubts, and you think, I'm serving, but is it really true? I could become a Mayavadi, and then I could just sit and meditate. And they're allowed to drink coffee too, isn't it? If you go in all the different ashrams, they're all drinking coffee. In North India, when you go to some ashram, first thing they'll say, chai piyenge. And South India must be coffee. So you may think, better be a Mayavadi. Srila Prabhupada, he once commented, he would see on the plane people, they're taking a meal and there's meat with it. And he said, there's only a little bit of meat. Most of the meal is not meat, but for that little bit of meat, everyone takes a little bit of meat, and for that they have to kill so many animals and they all have to go to hell. Just for little meat. So that's why it's good to have these classes in the morning and discuss all these points to keep our consciousness clear. Otherwise, we're enthusiastic in the beginning, and then we just cool down. That's called, what's the name of it? I can't remember the name now, but in Sanskrit there's a name. There's the ass makes a big loud noise, and then gradually becomes quiet when he realizes no one's listening to me. So in the beginning, making a big noise, Actually, much louder than that. If I did it with full loudness, you could hear it over in the village. Really? Even the asses, they make a big noise. But then, so in the same way, we may be all very enthusiastic and then just calm down and we think, now I became more sattvic. But actually, you just became less enthusiastic. And we say, now I learned how to cook, I learned how to give a class, I learned shlokas, I know how to do puja, and just do it in a kind of routine way. You can be like that. Just like giving another example from the Western world, many people, they have the experience, they drive to work every day. They drive their own car from their home to wherever they're working. Maybe they may be working in a university or an office or whatever. And many people have the experience that when they arrive home, they can't remember having driven, because they drive the same way every day, and it's the same routine. You stop at the stoplight, then you go, turn right, turn left, turn, and they can't even remember. They do it again and again. When they've done it 20 years, they should be alert when they're driving. But I guess they don't have to be that alert, because everyone, it's not like India where no one follows any traffic laws, but they actually follow the rules. So it's all very mechanical. So it can be the same in Krishna consciousness also. We're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, but we're not thinking about it, or we're doing the arati, and just do 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 do, and just like you might as well bring a robot. Just doing it mechanically. So it is possible to become just mechanical, so to speak, in devotional service. And although to those who are coming newly, they're all innocent and fresh, we look very good, very pakka, very first class, very senior. Oh, a very senior devotee. But actually we're just going along, doing everything very well, but not really advancing, because we're not really doing it for the sake of purification. We don't have that idea and doing it for purification. Maybe, of course, I may be exaggerating here, but that kind of syndrome can set in. We may even become proud. Oh, now I'm senior, you see. So these juniors, they don't know anything. What do they know? We may have that kind of attitude. So that means we're not becoming purified, we're becoming contaminated, actually, if pride enters our heart. Sada dambham hitva, the Raghunath Das Goswami, he says, always give up pride. Instead of acting for purification, we may see in our heart there's material attachment, there's lust, there's greed, there's envy, but we just... anyway, we just go on with it. We don't try to get it free from our heart. We accept our anarthas as being normal. And if we think about it, we think, well, maybe Krishna will bless me. Krishna's mercy, I'll get free of it. But we don't make any effort ourselves. Whereas here, Krishna says, Yogina karma kuravanti sangam tyakvatma shuddhaye. The yogis, they deliberately act for the sake of purification. They're very conscious that we have to become purified. We can't just, if at any point we think, okay, now it's okay, I'll stop here. We make some advancement, little more advancement, little more advancement, little more, and then we say, just stop, okay, here's good enough. Then we remain, we're not materialistic, but we're not fully pure. And if we're not making any further progress, then we're like Trishanku. Maybe you know the story. It's told in Ramayana, Mahabharata, mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. He was a king, good pious king, who became cursed to become a chandala. He wanted to go to the heavenly planets. The demigods, they refuse. You can't come. Chandala can't come to heaven. So Vishwamitra, he wanted to help Trishanku, so he sent him up. Anywhere you go up, I'll send you up by my own power. The demigod said, no way, and they pushed him down, so he was stuck in the middle. He was neither here nor there. So in the same way, we may be not materialistic, but not really very purified either. We're in Krishna consciousness, but not really making very good advancement. We're doing everything that we should be doing, rising early, chanting Hare Krishna, doing all these things, but not really advancing because we don't keep it in our mind that I have to surrender more and more to Krishna and become purified. So we have to ask ourselves, all right, now we're coming, we're enthusiastic, we should be enthusiastic. When we first come and we bow down to Srila Prabhupada and the Vaishnavas and Guru and Krishna and say, yes, I am yours, take me, I fully surrender to you. Can we do that? Are we still doing that after 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years? Do we still have that sense that, yes, I'm completely confident to surrender to you. That's all I want to do. I don't want anything else. Can we still maintain that? Or do we, on the side, cultivate some bad habits or material attachments? It may be that we give up all material attachments and then we develop some new attachments. The famous example of that given in Srimad Bhagavatam is Bharat Maharaj. Yes, Bharat Maharaj. He gave up all his attachments and became attached to a deer. He didn't go to the forest with the idea of becoming attached to a deer, but Maya had some idea how he could become attached. And of course, because he had developed so much pure attachment to Krishna, that was never lost. Neha bhikrama nashosti pratyavaya navidyate swapamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Krishna says that one's advancement in Krishna consciousness is never lost. It will help one and protect one from the worst fearful situations. So even though Bharat Maharaj, due to his attachment to a deer, had to take birth as a deer, but in the life following that, he again got a human birth, and he really acted only for the sake of purification, nothing else. Even to the extent that he was willing to allow himself to be killed rather than protest. He just thought, let me act only for purification. So let us remember, time to time we have to remind ourselves, if not all the time, we have to remind ourselves why we have come to Krishna consciousness, what is our aim. We're here to serve Krishna and the Vaishnavas. We want to go back home, back to Godhead, to the spiritual world, becoming completely pure. Therefore we have to act kayena manasa buddhya kevalaya indriya api. We have to act with the body, mind, senses, intelligence, only for the sake of purification. At the same time, understanding that it's not only by my own efforts that I'm going to become purified. Rather, it is my duty to act as best I can in Krishna consciousness and depend on the mercy of Guru and Krishna. So we should remain enthusiastic and not just fade out after some time. That early enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness is based on some innocent trust. But we should maintain the trust that Krishna will deliver us. We should maintain the trust that even if everyone around us isn't perfect, I'm also not perfect. But let us all try together to satisfy Krishna. that if we really try sincerely, Krishna will help us to overcome all our anarthas, unwanted attachments and bad qualities. So we should maintain that faith and understand that actually if we see we may see this devotee not as pure as I thought he would be. Don't get upset by it. Don't be disturbed. Of course, we may try to help that devotee to rectify, but we shouldn't become so disturbed that we lose our enthusiasm or faith in Krishna consciousness. We should know that everything in this world is temporary. Krishna is real. Krishna is pure. Whatever obstacles may arise in our mind by which we feel that we can't fully submit ourselves to Krishna, we should know this is just Maya. Because the position of the soul, Jivesarupoi Krishna Nityadas, position of the soul is only to serve Krishna. Krishna is real. If we surrender to Him, then we should. He will deliver us. He says that. Sarvadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja ahang tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishami mashucha. He says again. Don't worry. Don't disbelieve. Krishna will certainly deliver us if we surrender to Him. So we should remain enthusiastic, applying ourselves, not innocent in the state of in the sense of being blind to various discrepancies that need to be rectified, but not overly disturbed by them also. This is what we can call wisdom. You're talking about innocence. Often we say children are innocent. They're innocent until they're cheated or exploited, which unfortunately comes earlier and earlier. Otherwise, the children, they tend to be very trusting, but then when they're cheated or someone mistreats them, then they're not so trusting. We don't expect an elderly person to be as innocent as a child. And if someone does have that quality, that's often seem to be a very endearing quality. Sometimes it's said of Srila Prabhupada, innocent like a child, but at the same time he was absolutely tuned into the world. He's not someone who could cheat. But the innocence means that simple faith in Krishna. Simple, not in the sense of foolish, but direct, clear faith that if I surrender to Krishna, Krishna will surely help me. So the enthusiasm that is maintained in Krishna consciousness, to go on endeavoring year after year after year, that we can call, that is true wisdom. In the beginning there may be enthusiasm, which is good, the happiness of surrendering to Krishna, and we feel relief from all material entanglements and burdens, but Maya will test us in various ways to maintain that enthusiasm, that innocence, and that happiness. After all, we should consider everyone's interested in their own happiness. A very, very high and perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. We don't even care for our own happiness. We only think, I may suffer, but let Krishna be. If by my suffering Krishna can be happy, then let me take distress. That's a very high level. But actually, even if one has such an attitude, then in his heart he'll be very happy. By not trying to be happy, but only acting for Krishna's happiness, we become fully happy. So if we think that I'm just, even for my own happiness, even for my own benefit, that rather than just settling down, becoming slow in Krishna consciousness, or just being content with the level that I'm at. Maybe being a little proud, being a little senior so others can respect me. Of course, that should be there. But if one's happiness is based on some prestige, that will not satisfy the soul. Yayatma suprasediti. Savai pung sang parang paro dharmo yato bhaktirat hokshaje. Ahaitukya pratihata yayatma suprasediti. When we do everything only for the pleasure of Krishna, always, that is the topmost dharma, and that will satisfy the soul. So there's no happiness in anything but fully giving ourselves to Krishna, not being sidetracked by Maya in any way. Of course, Maya is always there, she's difficult to overcome, but our clear determination has to be there. Let me fully give myself to Krishna and not be dissuaded in any way. Let me do whatever is required for Krishna's satisfaction. And then automatically there is purification, because that is pure. That is the pure state, when we think that everything we do, that is only for Krishna's pleasure. So, Hare Krishna, any question about this, please?
When we're doing some services, like traditional preaching, then how can we differentiate that we are really enthusiastic or we have a moment of passion?
When we're performing various services, how can we differentiate if we're in the mode of passion or we're actually enthusiastic on the spiritual platform? Well, often in the beginning stages, or even for quite some time, it may be mixed. But basically, the mode of passion is prominent when we're thinking of our own pleasure, and pure consciousness is when we're thinking for Krishna's pleasure. So that's the test. As much as we're acting for Krishna's pleasure, that much we're pure. As much as we're acting for our own pleasure, that much we're impure. Simple test. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is ki jai. Hare Krishna.